Well, you know you have a habanera if you have ba, 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 the dotted quarter, eighth, and two-quarter beat. Before cigars, the Cuban export was the habanera, as pronounced in French, Havanaise. Sansols wrote that. We heard Maxime Vengeroff with the Israel Philharmonic.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn, and when you've got beautiful music on the radio, it is a beautiful day, no matter what. Thanks for sharing it with us. If you would like to be a part of WHFR Radio beyond enjoying and listening to our beautiful programming, I have an opportunity you might like to consider. It's called underwriting or sponsorship of our WHFR programs. We have been fortunate to have wonderful businesses connect with us by way of supporting financially the programming that we offer, and we would love your business or organization to be a part of this as well. Underwriting on WHFR is truly an easy process. By the way, it's tax deductible and very cost effective. What better way to get your business or organization name out to our wonderful listeners? Let's talk. Give me a call. Further details are available. 313-845-9842. I'm Susan McGraw, General Manager. Love to hear from you.
Beethoven was in a really, really bad mood when he composed his Eighth Symphony.
WHFR Dearborn, non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is a member of the Michigan chapter of the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON. And he's served his country in the United States Marine Corps from 1959 through 1963. Now, during that period, while attached to an air base, he, along with multiple military personnel, encountered a major UFO sighting. They all were briefed and sworn to secrecy. But today, right here on this show, he is breaking his oath of silence and is publicly sharing that account with the world. And I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Robert Peterson. Hello, Mr. Peterson.
Good afternoon, Dave.
How are you?
Fine.
Good. And you live in Michigan?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And you're also a member of MUFON. Now, you just recently joined MUFON, or you had been a member, hadn't you?
I had been a member previously, and then when I moved, kind of lost track and then got back with it.
Very good. Now, during the period you served in the Marine Corps, you were stationed at an air base. What air base was that again?
It's called Finland Air Force Station. It was an outpost about 90 miles north of Duluth, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. We had search radar, two height finders, and communications equipment, as well as helicopter pads for any rescue choppers in case something happened over Lake Superior.
I see. Lake Superior. Now, so that was in Michigan?
In Minnesota.
Oh, in Minnesota. You just said, didn't you? I wasn't listening. Shame on me. Very good. And then during that period, how long were you there?
I was there approximately 12 and a half, 13 months.
Okay. And what year would that have been then?
59 and 60.
59 and 60. And during that period, what happened?
Well, one day, I was on my way up to see a couple of friends of mine. I was on duty, but being in both military police and maintenance, I pretty much had to run of all the facilities, was authorized in various secure places. Mm-hmm. Went up to talk with a couple of friends of mine who would be in the building with the search radar.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came in, there seemed to be quite a bit of excitement. And they are watching something on the screen which was traveling faster than anything anyone had seen.
Hmm. On the screen, you mean the radar screen?
The radar screen.
Okay.
They scrambled a couple of fighter planes out of Duluth, Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
who went up to take a look. And the lieutenant put this on the speaker so we could all hear what was going on.
Mm.
And one of the things that really impressed some of us, and even though you're just in communications or just military police or a combination, you do learn a number of things, and that is that for something traveling at over 1,000 miles an hour,
mm.
they simply do not make a U-turn in a quarter mile of airspace.
Hmm.
It would take an F-104, which is what got, believe it, that they were 104s that were scrambled, 7.5 miles at that speed to make a U-turn.
Wow.
And one of the pilots commented that it was like he was riding a tricycle chasing a race car.
Oh, my goodness. And so they scrambled planes. They chased this thing for how long? I mean, did it give them a chase, or did just it, take off?
Well, as the pilots put it, it played with them.
Okay.
As I recall, this incident was 20-some minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And We listened, we watched, we saw things that literally were impossible.
Such as?
The object at times simply stopped and let the fighters go by it. Of course, they can't stop in midair.
Right.
Would stop forward or sideways motion and perhaps go straight up or straight down 500 or 600 feet. We don't have anything except a helicopter that'll do something like that, and not at those speeds.
No, well, a helicopter, although it goes up and down, and could stop probably on a dime, it wouldn't go that fast. It wouldn't make U-turns like that.
No.
No. 1,000 miles an hour, this is what the radar clocked it at? Is this what?
Yeah, because your screen has got grid marks on it, just like a piece of graph paper, so it's quite easy to calculate, and you've got a mouse with a arrow you can click. The computer will print out airspeed,
mm-hmm.
so they can keep track of it.
Right. Goodness gracious. It was going about 1,000 miles an hour. Now, did it ever come, did this object, was it one object or more than one object?
Just a single object.
Okay. Did this object ever come close enough to your vision to be able to determine
no,
its
shape? No, it didn't come that close to our installation.
Mm-hmm.
It stayed quite a ways away, but it was within range of the search radar. It mm-hmm. was also within range of the height finders.
Was it? Okay, you say now you talked to some of the pilots that you personally spoke to some of the pilots?
I just listened to the conversation.
Okay. And were they in close enough proximity to the object to be able to determine a shape or a size, let's say, when this object stopped and let them go by? Were they able to see it?
One of them commented that it looked like two pie plates that had been put together, one on top of the other.
Mm. Very typical description of the of the typical saucer-shaped UFO, huh?
That's right.
Well, do you think maybe we had something back then that was like that, or we were testing something, a prototype?
We never heard anything along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the really strange things that happened, one of the things is that in any military facility that involves communication or radar,
mm-hmm.
you have a logbook. The pages are numbered. Mm-hmm. Entries are made. If a mistake is made, you don't white it out. Mm-hmm. You don't cross it out. Either the senior non-commissioned officer or an officer will state entry such and such was done in error. The correct entry should read as follows.
Mm-hmm.
You simply do not tamper with them.
Right.
A couple of days after the incident, about three pieces of paper, which would be a total of six pages, were missing out of the logbook for the search radar.
Were missing? That's a no-no, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Hmm.
And they had been very carefully taken out, it would appear, with either a scalpel or a razor blade.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a box cutter or something? Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah. Hmm. And this was the official log?
Because the people on duty had been making entries,
hmm.
had been making entries from comments that the pilots were making.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say that you heard, you didn't speak to the pilots, but you heard them talking. You heard
yes,
the conversation.
Yes, because it was put on a speaker.
Speaker over where? Over the whole base? Or?
Just in the room where the radar screens were.
Okay.
This allowed everybody to hear what was going on.
Hmm. Okay. So, it would seem like they would want to turn those speakers off, don't you think? Or is
well,
it, that
apparently
was
somebody got chewed out for doing it later.
Oh.
But at the time, I mean, we're functioning as a military unit.
Hmm.
The senior officer figured that the more that everybody knew, the better off we'd all be, and the more likely we were to get an answer to any questions.
Right. Well, you know, I agree with that. I think not only as to the military, but in the government, I think that the public, the more we know about it, the more puzzle pieces we can put together, figure out what kind of a world we live in, what kind of a reality we live in, and possibly have suggestions. I mean, there are some brilliant minds out there that have no clue that these things exist, don't want to believe it because our grandfather's science has dictated it. It's not so. And if they had some of these puzzle parts, so to speak, perhaps they could come up with solutions. Not that it's a problem. It may well not be a problem. But, in other words, bottom line, the public should know. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And I think that some of the things that followed in the next few days are terrible on the part of our government.
Okay.
The one thing we found out within a couple of hours is that the base had been put on lockdown.
Hmm.
That people who were on duty we're going to have to stay
on duty
inside the fence line.
Hmm.
The gates had been closed. Media was turned away at the gate and told no comment. Contact the local sheriff's department.
Hmm.
The local sheriff's department had not been told anything and didn't have a clue what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go talk to
somebody. The following day, they brought people in to debrief us.
Okay, the day after this incident?
Yes, that's correct.
And who were these people that debriefed you? Were they military? Were they suits? Or?
Well, the question is, who were they?
Mm.
They were in civilian clothes. Later on, a year or so later, I did run into one who looked kind of embarrassed. Turns out that he was a sergeant.
Mm.
But at the time, they were wearing civilian clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, basically, we got told we're not to ever say anything about this. We were not to talk with each other about it. But, I mean, that's ridiculous. We're going to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when we find out that we're stuck on that base for 7 or 8 days because they've locked the gates.
They were locked down for 7 or 8 days?
That's right. And as people who had been on a three-day pass, or there were fellas that lived in the surrounding community, as they came in to work, they were not allowed to go home. Once you got onto the base, then you stayed till the end of the lockdown. But these three fellas that were doing the debriefing, they started talking to us, and it turned out that one of them was telling people that he talked with, well, what may have happened is that the radar picked up a freight train on Mount something or other, which is the highest point that a railroad in Minnesota travels, and occasionally, if you drop the search radar down as low as it would go, you could pick up a train west of the installation. But trains don't travel at those speeds. And especially iron ore trains, which are heavy, and, you know, we're talking 12 to 15 miles an hour with a loaded train, not 1,000 miles an hour. Another story that was being put forth is maybe we saw swamp gas.
Oh, the swamp gas was back then, huh?
Well, when did a search radar pick up swamp gas?
I don't know.
I've never heard of that.
When did they scramble fighter jets to go intercept swamp gas? Or a train? Am I right?
Yeah.
So their explanations didn't fit the evidence, is that
right? No, it didn't.
What about these radar... findings and the printouts, were they ever released to anyone, or were they cut out with a razor blade?
Well, some of the printouts would be sent to the duty officer. I am not sure what happened, whether they disappeared or not, but I do know that you just do not cut pages out of the daily log.
Right. So the three pages were missing of the log, and others that were there were certain areas were surgically removed. Is that correct?
Yeah, it would have been three pieces of paper, which would have been a total of six pages, were surgically removed.
Okay. Oh, I see. Okay. I thought you were saying that within a certain page, there were perhaps a paragraph or a sentence.
No, they took the whole page. So if somebody's just leafing through it, you don't have this glaring hole.
Right.
Now, one place where I think that they missed the boat, and I don't know, they never really did come up with an explanation of this. There were three Minnesota State Police officers who witnessed part of the hide-and-seek between the object and the fighter planes. And it turns out that all three of these officers had flown combat in the Korean conflict. So we're not talking about somebody who knows nothing about planes.
Right.
And they told the papers what they saw.
Oh, they did tell the papers what
they saw. They did tell the papers what they saw.
Did the newspapers try to spin it, like the, you know, editorialize, or just go ahead and state the facts?
Basically, as I recall, they stated the facts as the three state troopers told it.
Well, you got to hand it to them for that, because usually...
Well, they had a little backup here. There were some pilots from United Airlines who were at a resort having a union meeting. And they just happened to be outside taking a smoke break when one of them said, "What on earth is that going on up there?" So you've also got thousands of hours of experienced eyes looking from another 10 or 12 pilots who, again, you know what's going on up in the air.
Commercial airplane pilots, right?
That's right. And, of course, particularly back then, many of these guys would have come and originally been trained by the military, even if they were just transport pilots. So altogether, I think the papers had about 15 experienced pilots giving stories.
But whatever became of this story, I mean, it just go in the paper and then everybody forgot about it?
And it seems to have disappeared.
Yeah, well.
Now, the government has made a whole lot out of publishing this Project Blue Book. And I have taken a look at that, and I have read part of Blue Book, and I went in the appropriate time frame and looked. This incident is not in Blue Book.
No, the good incidents were not reported in Blue Book, and that is the problem with Blue Book. That's why Alan J. Hynek finally left Blue Book, because he was ahead of Blue Book, and he left it because he said, you know, you're not giving us the good stories, the good cases, and there's evidence to show that this is true. I'm going to have to take a break right now, a non-commercial break, I might add, but we will be getting back with our guest, Mr. Robert Peterson, shortly. And I need to remind everyone that they're listening too. We are not alone here on WHFR.FM. We are the station making waves, and we'll be right back. Stick around, please.
Welcome to Superheroes Training Camp. You, what's your superpower?
They call me Dave. I have an uncanny ability to save energy and money.
Really?
No, I don't have superpowers. I just bought Energy Star labeled appliances, windows, and a programmable thermostat. But I'm no superhero.
You're saving money, energy. That means you're saving the planet. You can't get more super than that.
Discover your own energy-saving superpowers at the Alliance to Save Energy's website, asc.org/consumers.
Do you find it difficult to find the time to work out? Does the price of a gym membership seem too expensive? Don't let these reasons get in the way of exercising. Try the Henry Ford Community College Fitness Center. The HFCC Fitness Center is conveniently located on campus in the Athletic Memorial Building. Drop in between classes or before you go home for the day. You'll save valuable time because you won't have to commute to a gym. And the best part is that use of the fitness center is free to HFCC students. Students should bring their student ID for access. Lockers are available for no charge, but you must provide your own lock. Come and work out at the HFCC Fitness Center.
Listen, was that you always on? If and when that's true, waiting stops within. There is a spring in the mountain and flows down to the town.
Sunday afternoons from 1 to 3 p.m. on WHFR, the station making waves, is the only time and place to hear the nationally syndicated show Mountain Stage, live music from the mountain state of West Virginia. Mountain Stage features acts from folk, blues, bluegrass, singer-songwriters, and more. It's Mountain Stage, 1 to 3 p.m. every Sunday on WHFR.FM. Mountain Stage, where musicians come to play.
This is the only station making waves, WHFR.FM, 89.3 FM on the radio, WHFR.FM on the computer. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Mr. Robert Peterson. We'll be getting back with him shortly. I'm David Twitchell, and I have a report here from Michigan MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. This guy is in Dearborn, Michigan, and this happened on August 19, 2007, around 11 p.m. And the witness states, I was in the basement of my house, and my dad was in the garage working on his car. My mother was outside sitting on a chair in the driveway. When I came outside, I saw my neighbor at the fence and her boyfriend. And she's telling me to look up at the sky, because there were some lights she didn't recognize as a plane. I looked up and saw two lights that looked like stars about 2 inches apart moving in the sky. I turned to tell my mother to look up at it, and when I looked back, the lights were there just for a split second, and then they just disappeared. And it seemed like one light went out before the other, but it's hard to say. My neighbor and her boyfriend said they had been watching the lights for a while before coming over to the fence to look for me. Her boyfriend said that at one point he could see stars between the two lights, like seeing through something. I think that meant he figured each light was independent of the other. I think they were part of the same structure, personally, the witness states. I only saw the lights move slightly in the sky by the time I looked up, and it appeared in unison, suggesting a craft of some sort. I first thought the two lights were stars when I looked up, but stars don't move or disappear, obviously. My father was in the garage the whole time, but there were four witnesses altogether: me, my mother, my neighbor, and her boyfriend. We have an airport not too far away from Dearborn in Romulus that frequently attracts a lot of air traffic over our area, but this had no FAA red lights on it and made no noise. We are savvy enough to know what are planes and what are not. The whole experience for me lasted probably 10 seconds. For my neighbors, it lasted longer, more like a couple minutes. Now, I personally, that's the end of the witness statement. But I personally met with and interviewed the witness, who was in his mid-20s, and seems very sincere, intelligent individual. So if you had a similar sighting or had a sighting on that particular date, let's see, the date again was August 19th, 2007, around 11 p.m., you can contact MUFON, Michigan MUFON, at mimufon.org. You can also go to the International MUFON at MUFON, M-U-F-O-N, MUFON.com. And MUFON, of course, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the scientific study of the UFO phenomenon. And now I'd like to get back with our special guest, Robert Peterson. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Peterson.
Would you
tell us about this briefing again? I don't know if you told us everything about the briefing. What was it like? I mean, how many were in the room at the time? And
basically, it was one-on-one.
Oh, was it?
And one of the things that was stressed is that, you know, you didn't see what you saw. And when they were coming up, it turns out that they had three different explanations. Of course, we'd been told not to talk to each other, but that doesn't work out too well. In time, we did. They also threatened us that if we told anybody later on, we could be recalled to active duty and court-martialed. Now, I think that this is somewhat ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the American public is a lot stronger than some people give it credit for. I have heard that there are those in government who say, well, the public could not handle the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I personally have served on a couple of juries, one of which was a somewhat gruesome case. I think the public is a lot stronger than certain government officials give us credit for being.
So do you think that that's really the reason they don't tell us? Give us official...
I'm not sure why, but I think that some people like to keep secrets, and by saying that this is top secret, it's satisfying somebody's ego.
Yeah, a handful of, Stephen Greer and the entire Disclosure Project, over 400 witnesses, high-ranking military and government officials, have come forward. You're familiar with the Disclosure Project. And Yeah, they say that it's so compartmentalized that each department knows a little bit about this, a little bit about that, and there's it all filters down to a handful of people who put all these all this stuff together. And yeah, I agree with you. I think that this is a truth that belongs to the world, not just this self-elected elite. You know what I'm saying? So, did you feel threatened at the time when you were being...
I don't think that we could help but feel threatened. I mean, particularly when they talked about, 20 years from now, if you decide to talk about it, we can recall you to active duty and court-martial you.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, as I was learning about the Roswell incident, I got to thinking about people who said that they had been threatened with being taken into the desert and getting lost.
Mm-hmm. Bullets are cheap, they said.
Yes.
Did they ever use that phrase with you, bullets are cheap?
No, they didn't.
Okay. But were there similar remarks made? Or just that you could be...
A couple of the fellows said that they had been told that they could be transferred someplace where they might not come back from.
Oh, boy.
Which makes you wonder.
Well, Vietnam at that time, eh? That
yeah.
That was, you know, 60s. Of course, that was... 59 is when we first went over there, and it was a police action. And they tried to keep that police action excuse all the way up through through the time we got out, you see. But, so, yeah. So that is threatening. That is some threatening comments. You'll be sent somewhere, or you won't come back. You're going to be sent out in the desert, and they'll never find your bones. Bullets are cheap. That kind of thing has been echoed by many, many witnesses who have been in your situation where they have where they've been debriefed. Were you made to sign something saying, "I never saw nothing, I don't know nothing from nothing"?
Well, see, if we'd signed something, that would have been evidence that we did see something.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have to sign anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I am not aware of anybody that did.
So, but you are still under this secrecy mandate from them. Is that correct? I mean, they said this is forever binding. 20 years from now, we could still punish you. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Easily.
Yeah. And do you feel that by coming forward on this, do you worry about it? Any apprehension?
Well, I'm old enough now so that I'm not too concerned about it.
Yeah.
Now, if they came into that dead of night and took me away, that's one thing. But if they tried to do anything like a court-martial, there might be a lot more publicity than they would really like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think these, for just that reason that you stated, I think these threats are hollow threats. You know, Bob Lazar, there's a lot of questions as to Bob Lazar's authenticity, but when he came forward that he had worked at Area 51 and the sports model UFO and what have you, he felt so threatened, and they did threaten him. And he'd find a bullet in his mailbox, that type of thing. He felt so threatened that he went to George Knapp, who was the... investigative reporter out in Las Vegas in that area for KLAS-TV, Channel 8. And Bob Lazar figured, if they're going to kill me, people are going to know why. You know? And so that's why he came forward on this. Do you feel safer now that you've come forward with this? Or just...
I don't think I feel much different, although in one sense... I feel a little bit more honest.
Yes, yes. So you've been keeping this secret ever since that time, is that right?
For over 40 years.
Who have you told? I mean, before this, I mean, your wife and...
I talked with my wife a few years ago at a MUFON meeting
for just a section with about 15 people present, I did tell the story.
Mm.
And
was that MUFON?
Yes.
Yeah, MUFON.
And someone did videotape it, and with the idea that if anything happened to me that didn't appear right in the next few years, that he had a source and a way to get it on the television.
Right, right. Well, did he plan on putting it out? I mean, you know, if it's
basically, it was a safeguard.
Okay, okay. So if you had to set something someplace else, then the thing is, you know, they videotape it. You know, 15 people around. What happens to that videotape? You know, what do they care? What do the authorities care? But if you're going out on the World Wide Web, as you are right now, that could be a different situation, couldn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope they're listening to it. Hope they know, because I don't think that they're going to do anything about it. Look at all the names in there. I forget his name now. I can't even think of his name, but he worked for Eisenhower's administration, and he's coming forward. A lot of pilots are coming forward.
Well, there was somebody by the name of Jimmy Carter that came forward
and
told the story.
Yes, indeed.
And myself, I think that some of the wind got taken out of some sails when a Belgian general who was in command of some Belgian fighter planes,
mm-hmm.
FO over Belgium and the Netherlands,
mm-hmm.
went public with it and gave his personal opinions following the debriefing of his pilots, which he has made public. And
right.
I know that from what I heard and read, the United States was absolutely furious with him.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that the people had a right to know.
Yes. Yeah, this country holds back. I mean, Mexico has pretty much told their people. France has told their citizens this is real. And Belgium, again. And I think Colombia. There's a lot of countries that have come forward and admitted, yes, this is real. We didn't want to say anything because we didn't know for sure. We know now. And when it comes over to America, is this all fantasy in America but real in other countries? That doesn't make sense, does it?
Well, I think that part of it is that they have been lying to us for so long they don't know how to extricate themselves from the lie, and they simply don't want to admit that they lied.
Right.
Because for one thing, particularly with some people questioning what's going on in Iraq right now, the last thing this country wants to start talking about is lying to the people.
Mm-hmm. And yet these lies come forward. It seems like anymore, every day they come forward. They're exposed. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
All these politicians, all these military personnel, you'd like to just rationalize and say, well, you know, it's kind of a human trait. People lie. But when it's for something, you lie when you say, I was going to call you and I didn't. You know? I remembered your birthday, but I set the card on the refrigerator and forgot it. You know? This is the kind of lies that people should be sticking to, and not, I know the most important thing in the world, in the history of mankind, and I'm going to deny it. What do you say to that? You agree?
Yeah.
Don't get me started on this, I tell you. But at any rate, so the other pilots, or not the pilots, but
other personnel,
because
altogether there were 15 or 16 individuals, both officers and enlisted,
mm-hmm.
that in one way or another took part in this, either because they heard it. Of course, there'd be a couple of fellows that would be in contact with the pilots.
Mm-hmm.
There would be the radar operators. Some of us were just sort of extra,
mm-hmm.
but could see what was going on. We could hear because the one officer had put it up on the speakers in the room.
So the official explanation was the radar tracked a train on top of the mountain.
Well, that was one. Another one was swamp gas.
Swamp gas.
And at this point, it's been a lot of years. I know that there was a third explanation, but I simply don't recall what that one was.
Mm-hmm. Just as silly, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So do you think that any one of these explanations would warrant an entire base being locked down for a week?
No. No, not at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much what I figured. Well, we're going to have to take a break right here to identify ourselves, but we will be back. And when I come back, I want to play a little sound bite of a pilot in the UK that had an experience with a UFO, and he's coming forward. And then we'll get back to Robert Peterson, and we'll discuss that. Wanted to let you remind you, I should say, that I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone here on the station making waves, WHFR.FM, 89.3 FM on your radio. And we're going to be right back, so stick around, please.
Notice anything different about your doctor lately? Did he or she ask a few more questions or spend a little more time explaining your condition? Today, doctors know the best health care begins with communicating. That's where you can help. Write down your questions in advance. Insist on understanding your treatment options so you can make informed decisions together. After all, you are on the same team. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together. On the web at orthoinfo.org.
Are you an HFCC college student looking for a particular textbook? How about writing utensils, paper, or Henry Ford apparel? You can find it all at the Henry Ford College Store. The College Store carries textbooks, supplies, clothing, and the most widely used classroom software. Staff members are always on hand to help you out. The College Store is located on the main campus in Dearborn, right next to the Facilities Management Building. For more information on the Henry Ford College Store, call them at 313-845-9603 or visit them online at www.hfcc.edu to order textbooks and quick study guides. The Henry Ford College Store has everything that you need to succeed.
Just then, Big Band with Dan has a new day and time. Now hear all your favorite Big Band tunes Monday afternoons from 2 to 4 p.m. Only on WHFR.FM, the station that's making waves.
This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're going to get right back with our special guest, Mr. Robert Peterson. But right now I'd like to play a short sound bite of a British pilot who recently reported close encounter with a cigar-shaped UFO over the skies of the UK. And his account was verified by yet another pilot, as well as their passengers, and radar confirmation. And it sounds pretty much like the man we're talking to today. But let's listen to this. Actually, it was a television interview. So let's listen to the interview, a very short clip.
Thanks for joining us. Pilots and aircraft passengers have confirmed sightings of a large unidentified flying object off the coast of Guernsey. The mysterious shapes were spotted earlier in the week and are described as a long, motionless object that measured up to a mile wide.
Yes, radar screens confirm the presence of the UFOs, and pilot witnesses are now preparing reports for the relevant authorities. Nick Waite has this report.
On Monday afternoon, Captain Ray Bowyer was piloting a routine passenger flight from Southampton to Alderney. But to his and the passengers' surprise, a strange object became visible on the horizon.
You've been a professional pilot for 20 years. You've flown thousands of flights. You're putting your reputation on the line here, so you must truly believe what you saw was very real.
In my years of experience, I've never seen anything like this. And frankly, I'd be perfectly happy not to ever again. It's a pretty chilling thing. And from my first sighting of it, which was initially 50 miles away, perhaps 40 miles away from the actual object, it appeared to be fairly small, but it must have been pretty huge. It must have been very, very much larger than I thought it was originally. I told air traffic control that they asked me for a size, approximately. I said about the size of a 737, perhaps twice the size. But in reflection, seeing this object from about 40 miles away, it must have been very, very much bigger than that. Perhaps, maybe a mile across, perhaps.
Were you scared?
I wasn't too happy, put it that way. I was quite glad to get on the ground and have a cup of tea.
Now, what's particularly interesting about this case is that not only did you see it, but your passengers saw it, and indeed radar picked it up. Can you tell me about that?
As I understand it, there was a plot taken on the Jersey radar to be a couple of miles south of the Caskets Lighthouse, and another aircraft also flying in the vicinity from the Isle of Man into Guernsey, I believe, saw a similar sort of thing.
Jersey Air Traffic Control confirmed their radar picked up some activity in the area, but say the data can't be taken as evidence of a UFO's presence.
Well, that's the soundbite. Let's get back with our guest, Mr. Robert Peterson. What did you think of that clip, Mr. Peterson?
I think that it sounded a bit like one of the pilots that I heard. I mean, they were somewhat amazed at what was going on, and I'm quite sure that they probably felt the same way, that if they never saw it again, it wouldn't bother them.
Yeah, it wouldn't bother them, is right. I mean, at least they don't have to admit to having seen it, huh? Well, I can certainly...
They probably got the same debriefing that we did.
Yeah, but still they come forward, because this is not military, this is a commercial pilots, but at the same time...
Well, so they don't really have control over some of these commercial pilots.
Well, they do and they don't. I noticed, like the O'Hare incident in Chicago just really recently, that made such a big stink. Of course, now nobody's talking about it anymore. They saw a UFO, it punched a hole in the cloud cover, et cetera, et cetera. And it came to United Airlines and officials, and they said, hey, we saw this thing. We got pictures of this thing. And they told them to keep their mouths shut, and everybody was poking fun at them. So they got aggravated and went ahead and told the press about it. And maybe that's what it takes, huh?
Could be.
But using the O'Hare incident, and this incident, and many others, as opposed to 10 years ago, let's say, certainly 20 years ago, these pilots are coming forward. And I say good for them. Keep it up. What do you think?
Oh, I'm all in favor of people stepping forward and stating what they've seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for the record, I did just remember the third explanation, which
okay.
makes even less sense than the train and the swamp gas.
Okay.
We were within 10 miles of Lake Superior. However, we were a couple of hundred feet above it. The third explanation was that the radar had picked up a ship on Lake Superior.
A ship?
Now, how fast do ships travel? I mean, even a PT boat at full speed is under 100 miles an hour.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it would seem like they would want to pick one of these inane explanations and run with it. They can't just say, well, it was all three.
Well, some of us, in talking with each other about it, came up with the idea that perhaps by having three different explanations, that then if somebody did talk about it and talked about what they'd been told it was, we would start looking foolish among ourselves.
Hmm. Yeah.
And to me, there's a certain amount of sense to that.
Yeah. Now, you had said several things happened which were just not right after this incident, one of which was the lockdown for 7 or 8 days. I assume that these three different inane explanations was another thing. Was there anything else that happened at that time that just makes
Well, to me, the most notable thing was the fact that three pages were actually removed from the daily log.
Okay.
I mean, that is, quite frankly, a court-martial offense.
Mm-hmm. My goodness. So, have you ever had another experience any time in your life, or was this a lone experience that you had in your life with unidentified object in the sky?
To the best of my knowledge, this is the only experience of this sort.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm happy to hear that, and the reason I'm happy to hear that is I am very mistrustful of people who say, I see them all the time. Well, they land in my backyard all the time, you know. But I had an experience once. I've told this on my show many times when I was 14 years old in the presence of my whole family and hundreds of people in the Detroit area. I have never seen one since. Never saw one before. That's why it was so amazing at that time to all of us, my whole family. But, and I assume that you would echo the sentiment, I hope it never happens again. Is that true, or would you like to experience one of these things again?
I don't know. I'd have to think about that. After the fact, while I was still in service, I was glad that I never went through it again. The debriefing was worse than the actual incident. You got the impression that you were not trusted. Now, I had a rather high security clearance because I was working in communications, also an MP.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you come out of that debriefing feeling as though they don't trust you.
Why is that? Because they're so threatening?
The threatening aspect of if you talk to anybody, you'll be court-martialed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had access to information back then that I still won't talk about, in, even though it probably has been declassified.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you understand that things are classified for a reason.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you hear this malarkey, and what on earth are they talking about, and why are they talking about it?
Mm. Well, there must be a hidden reason or a certain reason. Obviously, if they said you didn't see, or maybe not those words, but words to that effect, you didn't see what you saw, okay? They know that you know you saw what you saw, but you're not to relay this to anyone. So can you see any reason other than possibly the fear factor back then, afraid of panic? Can you see any other reason why they would want to keep this this truth secret?
The only two things that I can come up with is the fear that the general public could not handle it, and the other thing, perhaps certain individuals felt some sort of power in being able to tell us some of what they did.
Mm-hmm.
But other than those two, I simply cannot. And
who would
since
have?
Military service, I've gone on to get a graduate degree in psychology. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you'd have some kind of an idea. Of course, none of us know how we're going to react to any given situation until we find ourselves in that situation.
That's very true.
But with your psychology background, how do you think this world in general would react to, you know, if the president came forward and said, maybe another president came forward or some authority came forward and said, yes, we're going to have to admit that these things are real, and We've been hiding it from the public for this reason or that reason, so you wouldn't panic, but now we either trust you or we don't give a darn, so we're going to tell you. Whatever reason, if it was made official, how do you think the majority of people would handle it?
Well, I think that there would be a large portion who would simply say, aha, they're finally admitting what we pretty much suspected already.
Mm-hmm.
There's another group that would say, well, okay, I guess it's so. And I'm sure that there would be a small group that would panic.
Hmm. Head for the hills, huh?
Well, what happened after Orson Welles' radio broadcast?
Right.
There were people that panicked from that,
mm-hmm.
Who came in just a few minutes after the beginning and didn't realize that it was strictly fiction.
Right.
And I have read a couple of articles where people speculated that that might be what was driving the government's original denial of this.
Well, you know, the Roswell incident happened 9 short years after the War of the Worlds radio broadcast. And so I'm sure that that was on their minds. Now, what year it was, they did the same show in India. I can't remember. But even after, I guess they didn't learn from the experience in America, and they did this show in India with the same reaction. Except this time, the people who were frightened by the radio show went and burned down the radio station. You know? They were that upset after finding out they'd been duped. But yeah, that could have been a big factor back in 1947, because we didn't know diddly squat about, we thought we did, about our cosmos, our universe. But you know, when I was, now I'm dating myself, but when I was in grade school, I was told that there were 7 galaxies in the entire universe. 7, count them. Now we know there are more than 40 billion in the known universe. So I don't think that the panic factor would really be a factor. Like you say, unless it's just a very few. Do you agree?
Oh, I would agree totally with that.
Mm-hmm. So most people would just say, yeah, we know that. We've known that all the while. And I'm glad you're finally getting around to admitting it now. The polls seem to indicate that about 90% of Americans, at least, believe that the government knows more about the UFO situation than they're telling us.
I think that a lot of people have began to seriously think about this when CNN did that series, and Larry King
right.
came out and did some interviews.
Right. And they had Stanton Friedman on the Larry King show, along with the debunkers. And I love to hear these debunkers get on.
Well, some of them trip over themselves.
That's why. That's why I love to hear them, because they trip over themselves. They give explanations that do not fit the evidence, just like the train / swamp gas / boat ship explanation. They don't fit the evidence, and they're constantly doing that. Do you agree?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Definitely.
Well, Mr. Peterson, I really appreciate you being on our show today. We're going to have to wrap it up, unfortunately. I'm enjoying the conversation, and I want to pat you on the back for coming forward with this information, even if it might be at your own peril, which I doubt very much. I mean, you know, they threaten you, and so you keep your mouth shut, and they say, after a while, I say, wait a minute, what are they going to do to me? You know? But if you had one thing to say to the public, what would that be?
They really are out there.
They really are out there. Yes, indeed, they are. And I hope more people like yourself come forward and tell of their experiences in the past and their own personal experiences with UFOs and UFO phenomena. Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Peterson.
You're quite welcome, sir.
Bye-bye. And I want to thank you for joining us on We Are Not Alone. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can write to me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. I almost forgot my email address. And you may also call at WHFR Studios at area code 313-845-9646 or email at whfr@hfcc.edu. And please visit my website at ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. And please watch the Comcast cable TV version of We Are Not Alone in the Downriver area on channel 20 on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. and repeated it at 10 p.m. And please stay tuned to WHFR for the best in alternative music. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.